Good morning, everyone. I think we are live, and it is, as always, a pleasure to be joined by probably the investment guru in South Africa, Mr. Magnus Huystek, who is joining us this morning to chat a bit about prescribed assets and touch on a few other things. Now, prescribed assets is a thing that the Institute of Race Relations has been keeping an eye on for at least 2 years, and even a bit before that, but for the last 2 years, we've been keeping a very close eye on it, understanding that our government is very much tempted to see where it can get its hands on more money from you, the ordinary citizen. Now, my name is Hadman Pretorius. I'm the Deputy Head of Policy Research for the Institute of Race Relations. And without further ado, Magnus, thank you very much for joining us this morning. You say business is doing well. People are starting to wake up to this idea of prescribed assets. Why should they wake up to it?
Well, good morning, Aaron, and to your viewers. I think, you know, you can only hide certain things, especially bad news and bad results, for so long. And we've now had 5 to 7 years of very, very poor returns for most people in South African pension funds. And in fact, I'm battling to find funds that have actually beaten inflation over 5 years, and it's starting to move towards the 7 year period. So people are starting to wake up themselves. They're now asking questions to their trustees and their advisors and saying, "What gaan hier aan? I'm not making money." And the old chestnut, and don't worry, it's long term, it'll come right, is not working anymore. And people are increasingly now starting to ask questions and to realize that their pension fund is under pressure, is under threat, and that they must step in, because they must step up against the vested interest in the business and start taking control of their investments. And that's happening on a very large scale in our business countrywide, because we don't work for the big institutions. We work for our clients, and our clients are waking up. But we have been shaking them for a while and saying, "Wake up, wake up. There's a train smash coming." And the train smash is literally happening as we speak.
Now, you mentioned this idea that even companies that a few months ago, a year ago, were perhaps not relaxed, but not as awake to the issue of prescribed assets as you have been and we have been, that even they are now, as it were, joining the party. And you mentioned specifically that this morning even you got something from Alan Gray about offshore investments. Is there new leadership going on? Is there a realization that the client, after all, matters?
I think the discussion of prescribed assets is part of a bigger discussion, and that is the controls that government already has over your pension fund in terms of Regulation 28 of the Pensions Act, which prescribes where the fund manager and or your advisor may or may not invest your money. And the salient point for many years now has been you're only allowed to invest 30% of your pension in offshore assets, whether equities or bonds or cash or whatever the case might be. The balance has to be invested in South Africa. And as a result of the very dismal performance of the JSE, and you're forced to invest in the JSE, and I don't think many people realize how poor the JSE has done for the last 7 to 10 years, they're now starting to see that, you know, the rest of the world has had a tremendous bull market, especially in the United States, NASDAQ, DiTech, and we are not part of it. We have been left behind. So that's the first part of the discussion is people are now starting to pressure government to increase the offshore exposure. They've made no noise about that, so I don't think that will happen. So already your returns are being affected very badly. Now comes government, and they made it at the 2017 elective conference. They said we need to look at pension funds, prescribed assets, and they've been obfuscating a little bit in the last couple of weeks and months about, well, they're not really prescribed assets. We're just having discussions with the pension funds, etc. I don't care what you call it. They have earmarked pension funds as a way to raise cheap capital to fund government-sponsored project, whether it's infrastructure, Eskom, water. And they've quite clearly said it's in order to get cheaper finance. And cheaper finance means lower returns to the investors. So it's part of a bigger discussion. It's Regulation 28, it's offshore investing, and it's also prescribed assets against the background of a stock market in South Africa that has not grown by much. And if you take out 3 or 4 shares, notably Naspash, Prosus, BAT, and BHP Billiton, our JSE is actually down 30% over 5 years. It's an astounding reflection of how bad the economy is doing and the stock market is doing. And lastly, Herman, I have some numbers which hasn't been published yet. That since Cyril Ramaphosa took over in December 2017, 307 billion rand has left the JSE via the foreigners. They have pulled their money for the last 24 months. One month that there was a slight positive inflow of money. For the rest of those 23 months, money has been flowing out at an average of about 10 to 12 billion a month. And you nor I have not seen a word of this in the press. We keep on saying, invest for the long term, it's part of the cycle. I'm saying there's a bigger problem here, and we need to discuss that problem and warn people who care to listen. If they don't want to listen, that's fine. But these are the stats. It's not emotion. I'm not saying panic, run for the hills. I'm giving facts. And people must make up their own minds what they want to do with those facts.
Now, is South Africa, has, because we've been underperforming the JSE specifically, now has this been just compared to your UK, your USA, your Japan, or are we even lagging behind our emerging market competitors, where even those emerging markets are far more attractive for investment than we are?
But compared to the developed markets, we stone lost. We don't compete against them anymore, and we used to. For more than 100 years, 110 years till 2010, we were, together with Australia and the US, one of the top three investment destinations in the world, believe it or not. But since 2010, that has changed dramatically. And we were also, of course, the top choice amongst the emerging markets. But that has also changed. We are lagging very far behind over the last 10 years, 5 years, mainly as a result of our underperformance. And also China has been outperforming everything else in the emerging market space. And with the result that against emerging markets, we are a very bad laggard. And that is why pension fund managers are saying, and I speak to them from time to time in London, they're saying, if we have a choice to make between South Africa and Malaysia or South Africa and Philippines, it's not South Africa, it's the other countries. And that is a great deal of worry to South African investors.
Now, this surely, the government should understand that, or they do understand, I think, that just as your international investor has perhaps the opportunity to move assets to Malaysia or overseas, South Africans locally have currently, at least, some of that same ability. And now we start seeing, picking up from Treasury side, this idea that emigrating South Africans will not have access to their pension funds overseas for at least 3 years. Now, do you think that betrays a kind of panic that the ANC knows it has made South Africa such an awful place to put your finances that they are now trying to shut the doors so that money and capital can't go over the border?
I'm sure National Treasury and other government institutions are aware of the great number of people of all races who are considering immigrating either financially or themselves and setting up businesses elsewhere in the world. And it's part of an attempt to control money, to control the flow of money. The decision came with absolutely no negotiation or warning or discussion papers. It was just announced, I think, 28th of July. Boom, there you have it. If you are going to immigrate and you have money in a pension fund, you have to wait 3 years and prove that you've been out of the country for 3 years before you can have access to your money. And that is, of course, caused all kinds of ripples. So who says they can't change that 3 years to 5 years, to 10 years? Government or government spokesmen have been a bit surprised at the reaction to their announcement, but they don't understand the fear of ordinary South Africans or ordinary people who have built up some assets and who are intending to use those assets to set up in another country, either to buy a house or a flat or a business or feed your kids. And you have a government that suddenly decides, without consultation, you can't take your money out for 3 years. So the fear is they can change it again to 5, 7, 10. And the second part of the fear is what will happen to my money, in what format? Will it stay behind in South Africa? What kind of returns will I get? And if you're in a hard currency country and your money's in a soft currency country, your danger is the rand goes from 7 by the time you emigrate and you're poor. You're becoming impoverished. So this is all part of the debate that's going on amongst people about the control of money, and hence the discussion that we're having today. We need to have these discussions, but there's a great deal of cynicism about government and what they say and what they eventually do. So there's a bit of panic, and that's why a great deal of money is flowing out of the country as a preemptive planning stage, because you don't know when government will change its mind.
Now, to pick up on that point of cynicism, Enoch Godongwana, I think, excuse me, last week made the point saying that they are reconsidering prescribed assets, and we've heard from government side that prescribed assets will be voluntary. Now, that's a contradiction in terms. It's like a married bachelor. So the idea of voluntary prescribed assets, but then we also get this notion that government, these funds will be invested wisely. Now, do you think anyone believes the government's rhetoric around this issue, saying no need to be worried, these will be either sensible investments or they will be voluntary, but then in parentheses, until they are no longer voluntary? Do you or anyone really take these kind of qualifications attempts seriously?
No, I personally don't. I can't speak for anybody else, but I don't. And the people that I speak to in the investment business doesn't take it seriously, because government has a proven track record over 20 years, and that came out a week or two ago, that our state-owned enterprises have been running deficits for the last 20 years to the tune of 200 billion rand. First time he's admitted that, the Minister of Finance. So we have virtually all our state-owned enterprises are making massive losses. So where's the track record that you can come to the private sector and say, invest in one of our schemes, which will give you a market-related return? And it's absurd to suggest that you're going to trust the government. It's like an investment scheme that keeps on losing your money, and he comes back year after year and he says, Herman, this year we're going to make money. Forget about the loss you made last year. And it just rolls over from year to year to year. So there's an enormous amount of skepticism. People like Andrew Cantor from Future Growth has said they already invested in many government schemes, but they're no bankable projects. And what he means by bankable project is a project that makes a return and is controlled by good boards and there's governance. And this applies to foreign investors. It applies to local investors. So the world is looking at this and saying, but there's nothing to invest in because we don't trust government The minute they put their people in there, cater deployment, the money flows out the back door as quickly as it comes in through the front door. So, you know, I won't put money in it for my clients. They pay me to make the money. So why would pension funds do it? That's where the government power comes in. They will negotiate and voluntarily, you know, get agreement. But the proviso was, it was very interesting. There was a MoneyWeb interview with Enoch Godongwana where he said, almost as an afterthought, if you don't get enough support from the private sector, then that is when they will introduce legislation. Now, there is a clear warning to the market. You either listen to what we do or tell you to do, or we will force you to do it. Now, we'll just have to simply wait and see how this pans out. And if you now combine this with what's happened the last year in this country, I mean, our finances are absolutely gutted. There's nothing in the kitty. I mean, we've already spent the $1 billion we got from the IMF and from the New Development Bank. It's gone. It's wasted. Our budget deficit is going to be horrendous this year, much larger than the market is expecting. And our tax revenue has collapsed. And not because people don't want to pay tax. There's just been no money. There's been no profit. So we're in a very, very dark and clammy hole. And the only source of revenue is going to be, in my view, the pension funds.
Because the way I understand it, if a government has run out of money, they can borrow money, but that is now becoming more and more difficult for South Africa. We can increase taxes. That is not a feasible option. As you say, the tax revenue intake has been disastrous. They can cut expenditure, but that is, we've been hearing about cutting expenditure from Tito Mboweni for a long time now, and the best he could come up with is that we're going to look at some point at possibly considering, you know, investigating whether there's a possibility for a chance that we should somehow at some point cut expenditure. So our
maybe.
So then we are stuck with two options, printing money or getting hands on the pension pot in South Africa, which, as I understand it, is one of the biggest pension pots in the world.
That's quite correct. I mean, the pension fund industry in South Africa has been remarkably successful, and people have, via tax incentives and also willingness to save, have been using pension funds. So we have a very large pension fund industry in South Africa relative to the rest of the world, where they have different kinds of pension funds. So obviously that pot of money is looking very attractive, and from time to time, we've seen politicians get up in parliament and saying pension funds, pension funds. And if you look around the room, this is the only pretty girl in town. If you want to have a dance, you're going to dance with the pension funds. I don't see how they're going to get around it. The alternative is printing money, or you're going to have a combination of two of these things. So we'll have to see in the next 6 weeks or so, we'll have the medium-term budget. And you might recall in the supplementary budget, when was it, June or July, where Tutu Mboweni, in his speech, he looked up and he said, where's the piece about prescribed assets? He was honest enough to look up and, to the camera and he asked someone in the room, remember it was on a Zoom, he said, where's the piece about prescribed assets? And someone mumbled in the background, oh, they're not finished with it yet. So, you know, that was just a little giveaway that prescribed assets was going to be discussed. It was pulled at the last minute. He was quite upset that he wasn't told about it. So we're going to see in the next 6 weeks or so an announcement of a kind, or if not now, definitely in the main budget in February 2021. Because government finances is in a shambles at the moment. Tax revenue is much worse than we thought. I know Kiswetter was talking about $300 billion shortfall. But based on yesterday's number on the GDP shrinkage, I would suggest we're closer to $350, maybe $400 billion gone. And government can only blame itself for the way they handled this pandemic. They destroy the economy to save some lives of elderly people who were sick in any case. And they're proud of the fact that they were doing. They said, we've been very successful in this, but they've destroyed the economy, which is going to have very, very serious long-term implications.
So I think you touch on why this is now such an important issue and why the Institute of Race Relations, we have really started to seek to apply pressure to corporate South Africa to come out and say, you've entrusted us with your money, we will stand up for your interests. And we saw a very similar thing with expropriation without compensation early in the year when we asked the banks, are you going to expect someone to pay off debts on a property that had been expropriated? And the answers always come back from the big actors in corporate South Africa. Yeah, no, speak to someone else. So if we have this problem, we have this challenge, do you think the big corporate actors have stepped up to the table enough to either inform their clients of the risks of prescribed assets or stepped up enough in the interest of their clients to say to the government, to Treasury, guys, this is a terrible idea?
Look, I think that they, from time to time, they've made statements. Leon Kampfer from ASISA has come out against it, but I don't think that the industry itself has done enough and warned people and been vocal about it. That's, they do, their existence in many respects is reliant on the tax incentives that they get from government. And I'm quite sure that government plays this card. Don't give us a hard time. We can adjust those tax incentives. We can reduce them. And hence, don't speak out too much against it. But I don't know. It's just my observation. And being such a cynical guy that I am, I tend to expect the worst. But it's surprisingly how little, and this is where the IRR is playing such a valuable role. The media, the mainstream media, has been absolutely deathly quiet. Very little discussion about this. With the exception of maybe the Business Day, Business Live, the other financial media websites and publications have been remarkably coy about this, not wanting to stir the pot too much. And one questions why. And we need to question this. We need to ask probing questions just because if they get away with it, they might turn around and say, well, nobody objected. We're doing what the people want. It can easily mobilize a couple of factions in politics and outside politics on the periphery of politics to support prescribed assets. And you'll get them. The people come out and make statements supporting government because it means more money that flows into the troughs. But the media has been remarkably quiet about this. And I quite frequently read reports in very major newspapers talking about retirement and retirement contributions, and the advice is just, well, you don't have enough money in your retirement pot, Herman, put more in. I find that ludicrous. It's just absolutely bizarre.
Now, the personal finances and the economy go so closely together that why do you think South Africa has become such an unattractive haven for investment, having this detrimental effect on people who have their finances here? What happened?
You can have an hour-long discussion about this, or you can summarize it very briefly. You're going to get to the same conclusion, in my view. And it starts not with the investment world. It starts with law and order. It starts with good corporate governance and the protection of property rights and the protection or the acknowledgements of contractual rights. Then you get to things like the regulatory environment for business and regulations and the infrastructure and et cetera, et cetera. And if you start analyzing all of those things, The ANC in the last 10 to 15 years have attacked all those prerequisites that are necessary for a modern quasi-private sector economy to flourish and to create jobs. And they've attacked all of those things and destroyed all of them. Hence, the money is flowing out. The capital is going somewhere else because, first of all, you're not certain about your life and limb, the ownership of your property. I mean, like the click strike yesterday, where were the police? Where was government and saying, you know, there is a dispute about an issue. Do not attack lawful abiding citizens in the run of the business and blame, attack and burn down. So that's the message that gets through to London and New York, that a listed company that finds itself in a political situation can be attacked. And and the EFS has done that before with previous shops, H&M many years ago, et cetera, et cetera. And government does not protect the rights and the property of the private sector against political opportunism that we are seeing right now in South Africa.
So looking at other emerging markets, their track record, you know, places like Mauritius and Botswana and perhaps even Kenya and Rwanda, and you mentioned Malaysia, their track records might not be perfect, but does the word come through to London and New York, as you say, that, and I think Ethiopia might be a good example very recently, we'll see how that pans out, but is it just a comparison where you don't have to do absolutely everything perfect, but at least start getting somewhere with these reforms because investors will keep an eye on that?
Investors are not stupid, especially the large investors. They rely on a multiple of sources to make up their minds. They've got the political analysts on the ground in South Africa. They rely on companies like Moody's and S&P Global Ratings and Fitch. And combined, they will look at a country and they have like a list of things that they look at. Amongst others, the regulatory environment, the freedom to create businesses, and there are many, many metrics that they look at. And on most of these things, we are going backwards relative to the rest of the world, like the freedom of economic activity, the survey that's done every year. I mean, 20 years ago, we were number 50 in the world. We now are 106 or maybe 110 out of 150 countries. We've rapidly just dropped, as opposed to a country where 20 years ago Mauritius was worse than South Africa, and today they're number 13 in the world. Their regulatory environment attracts investors, whereas our regulatory environment chases them away. They're not interested. It's too much PT, too many rules. And guys want to invest money, and they move away very quietly. I always joke that money comes in ostensibly on the front pages of newspapers, press releases and grandstanding and handshakes, but it goes out very quietly on the back pages.
That's a brilliant way of looking at it. But in South Africa, it comes in on the front page, but it leaves on the cartoon. Because if you look...
It goes out via the obituary columns.
Yeah, and if we want to look at this political attitude, what are your thoughts on we've heard people like Blade Nzimande talk about the investment strike must end. It almost has a sort of an entitlement element that South Africa has a right to demand that investors come here. Surely the fact that someone like Blade Nzimande can say something like that and represent in a way at least government attitude, if not government policy. I mean, you'd be mad to say, yep, that's a government that I think I can trust with my assets.
Well, that's exactly the reason why money is not coming in, but it's going out. It is an attitude, as you say, the entitlement. You know, we're the liberators of South Africa, of the bad whites. We're entitled to money from the rest of the world. And I think for a while that did play a role in money coming into South Africa. But I think that honeymoon period is gone a long time ago. And the honeymoon was ruined by the absolute rampant theft, corruption, and destruction around you. You look at any SOE and you look at the incredible amounts of money that sloshes around, that people pay themselves, that private sector doesn't even pay. You look at the percentage of government wages in South Africa relative to GDP, which is doubled, in 10 years. You look at the personal protection equipment scandal with the COVID-19. The investors look at this and they say, I don't know, we cannot put money into that country. We don't know where the money's going to go to, who's going to steal it, which ANC connected caterer will get the Aston Martin this time, and so forth. We go somewhere else. We're going to invest in Norway. We're going to invest in Finland, where there's absolute scrupulously governance rules. But there's no country in the world that's perfect. But boy, have we been dropping down the scales so rapidly the last 10 to 20 years. And you've got to look at the government and the ANC. And we're still sitting here, almost middle of September, and we still have no major high-profile ANC connected who's been arrested or charged for a cent of corruption or theft, despite the National Prosecuting Authority has been threatening for how many months now that it's coming, and it's coming, and we see nothing happening. If the Zondo Commission was taking place in any modern, well-controlled government country in the world, the States or Canada, Australia, there would have been people waiting outside the door. As they walked out, they'll be arrested and charged. Why can we not charge just someone who SARS raids their accounts and closes their accounts? They have the right to do that. The Reserve Bank has the right to close your account tomorrow if there's a suspicion that you have illegal offshore money. They don't even have to go to court. They can do so. They have those rights. It's never been used in this country. Why not?
Now, it's very easy to it's not very easy. It actually takes a lot of work to understand in what a dangerous and dire situation the country is. But I always have this idea of this. There was a 10-year period between 1985 and 1995. August 1985, P.W. Botha, index finger in the air, says, you will not lead white South African minorities down the road of abdication and suicide. The Rubicon speech, it all went wrong in 85. And 10 years later, we have Mr. Mandela walking onto the pitch at Ellis Park and 40,000 white people chanting his name as their president. And then from 95 to roughly 2006-07, we did see some positive economic things happening. Sure, the commodity circumstances globally sure helped us a lot, but it's not like we've never come close to the form of success that would see money either stay or come back or flow in from new sources. It's not completely unfamiliar to us, right?
No, not at all. I mean, as you point out, we had the commodity super cycle from about 2002 to 2007. The economy was growing. Unemployment, can you believe it, was 10%. 10%. I mean, we were generating massive tax revenues. But I think that lulled the government into a false sense of security that this halcyon days will just continue indefinitely. And they started spending more money, and the government wages started running away, budget deficits, and the world global situation changed. And then, of course, when the government started talking about expropriation without compensation, they were warned by the Wall Street Journal, by The Economist, by the Financial Times, They were warned by Ricardo Hausmann and a host of other influential economic thinkers around the world, don't go down that route. It hasn't worked in Zimbabwe. It hasn't worked in Africa. And that's where our problem started. And this is, again, doesn't appear on the front pages. But capital is very smart. It's very self-centered, and it disappears very quietly. Packs its bags quietly and leaves. And that's what's been happening. And you cannot get a president of the country, how good he is or not good he is, get up in power and time after time attack white monopoly interests and white monopoly capital and after your land, after your businesses, and expect nothing to happen. Well, it's happening right now, and we are all paying the price because we're all getting poor if we don't have any offshore assets or any offshore investments. You know, that is just, you cannot attack capital on the one hand and the next day put out the begging bowl for capital for foreign investment. It's just not going to happen. It's a schizophrenic approach to life. It's not going to happen.
I remember in August last year during a presidential Q&A session, President Ramaphosa spent 10 minutes at the beginning of his speech talking about how important it is to attract investment. And then in the rest of the speech, he said government spending must be at the center of the economic system. The NHI must happen. Prescribed assets should be on the table. Expropriation without compensation must continue. And I think when you say it's schizophrenic, I think you're absolutely right. Literally in the same period of 30 minutes, our president said we must attract investment and then gave a shopping list that would keep any investor awake in night terrors for what an investment destination might look like. So if a miracle was to happen, and Magnus Huystek were to become president for a week, what do you do?
You know, first of all, you got to, as I said earlier in my preamble, I mean, law and order. You have to fix up the issue of safety and security. Secondly, you got to fix up our educational system because we're producing thousands, if not millions, of uneducated children which are not prepared for the modern world. We still have this concept in our minds that land is wealth and give that to the people and they will become poor. I mean, that is a third industrial revolution type of mindset, whereas the world has moved on. A company like Apple has a greater GDP than the entire South Africa. One intellectually based innovative company has a bigger GDP than the whole of South Africa with all its mines and all its factories and all its ports and harbors. It's not in the land anymore. And that thinking must change. We must equip all our people to embrace the fourth industrial revolution in terms of job creation, of freedom of association and stuff like that. And then, of course, you need to look at your regulations. I mean, I look at my little company and I ask my compliance officer, the other day, how many laws can put me in jail? And she kind of went away and came back and she said, well, you've got about 14 laws that you could break during the course of a day. And I think one of them can send me to jail for 30 years. And I'm saying, why the hell am I doing this? So you've got so many laws. You've got the FICA and the, I don't want to even go there, but they've all got little acronyms. And she said there are 14 laws, from labor relations to health and security to FICA to Forex to banking laws to FSCA laws. And if I break one inadvertently or unknowingly allow it to happen in my business, I can go to jail. And the real crooks are walking free.
Yeah, no. In fact, they might improve their position on the parliamentary list, but the issue of South Africa as you know, I tell me if I'm wrong here. I think The problem in South Africa has been almost synthetic. It has been a man-made catastrophe where if we can get to a point where it's they don't even have to make do the right things, they could just stop doing the wrong things, then you would see an opportunity for what I believe is crucial for people of all backgrounds to start monetizing their skills, that there is so much standing in the way of anyone from someone like you, a highly qualified investor, all the way down to someone who just wants to sell achar. There's so much of a series of obstacles between people, their skills and the ability to monetize and start becoming economically productive. Do you think it's fair to say that what's gone wrong in South Africa isn't what should go right? Isn't what the government should start doing, it's what it should stop doing?
Oh, absolutely. I agree 100%. Government believes it's the center of the universe and that everything starts and ends with what they do, what they decide, and hence the centralist, statist approach to a developmental state. In fact, history all over the world shows you the more government gets out of the way, the more the private sector will move in and start taking over the functions of the government and do it extremely well based on private sector competition rules. And I think we need to look at places like Singapore, where Lee Kuan Yew stepped in and those famous interviews with him. What he did when Singapore 50 years ago was as corrupt and mismanaged as South Africa, he simply started arresting the top guys and putting them in jail to stop corruption. And you know what? It stopped. You know, we have this corruption. We have the Zondo Commission. We have got so many commissions. We have humongous amounts of money flowing around the banking system. I'm always amazed when we read about X billion rand from the Guptas was moved from South Africa to Dubai. The banks know about it. The reserve banks know about it. Herman, if you and I want to move a million rand or 10 million, you've got to fill in forms till kingdom come, do a blood test, do a EQ test before they will allow you to take out 1 million rand. How is it possible for the Guptas to move that kind of money through the banking system into foreign countries? And now he's saying, oh, we must get the money back. We allowed it to go out of the country. And the Reserve Bank knows about it. And they as complicit in this whole thing. So that's what I'm talking about. We need not for the ANC to be protected. You need a government to step up and arrest the people who've got enough evidence, but it's not going to happen. Because as the president says, my job is to make sure the ANC does not split up. So, well, we are paying the price of that approach to running a country.
Now, one of the things that the IR has been saying as we approach the end of our time, I think we still got a few minutes left, so I'm going to – it's not often that I get to speak to one of the real South African gurus, so I will make as much of my time as I possibly can. One of the things that we at the Institute have been saying since 2012 is that the ANC is on a downward path. It is on the wrong side of what we call three mega trends. It's on the wrong side of age. Its voters are older while the country is getting younger. It's on the wrong side of geography. Its supporters are rural when the country is becoming more urban. And it's on the wrong side of education, where it relies on voters with more basic education, where the number of South Africans with higher education is inching upwards. So with this background of ANC, I believe in a fatal death spiral, and perhaps within the current climate, if it dies politically, it will probably be noted as a COVID death. But do you think that South Africans have used as citizens the opportunity to make their voices heard? Or do we still have a strange idea that the government isn't something that we can successfully challenge? Is that, do you think that South Africans can do more than what we are currently doing to tell, to say to the government, you know what, I am your employer, there are some things you cannot do and we will stop you?
Well, civil society has been taken over the role in many instances of the opposition party, almost of the opposition media, and civil society like the IRR and a host of other non-profit organizations have put tremendous pressure on government, but we can do tremendously more. There's still a lot of lethargy. People are saying, I couldn't be bothered. You know, as long as I can have a pizza and a beer on a Friday night, I'm fine. Alles sal reg kom, don't worry. And we need to really wake up. But civil society can do much. It has done a great deal. It is putting enormous pressure on governments, and also by means of informing the rest of the world of what's happening in South Africa. That's almost the more important role that it plays, is the outward communication to the rest of the world, and just presenting a more realistic picture, not the one that the government wants portrayed. So we need to do more. We need to support guys like you and a host of other guys, and our media, especially our critical media. I include Business Day, as I said earlier, or the Arena Group, Biz News, and perhaps Daily Maverick, who's come up with one or two very interesting articles. That's what keeps government on its toes. They might not admit it every day, but and guys like you must be irritating the hell out of them, wishing you would just quietly go away and go and fill in your forms. But we can do more. We can do more. But it's up to the individual. And I just want to end off by bringing it back to the individual who can and has some authority over his or her investments in one way or the other, is to look at it, see what you can do, and take steps, because nobody cares more about your money than yourself. Don't trust the big financial guys. They're not really interested in your individual case. They're interested in their position in life.
I think we spoke about this a previous time, you and I, where you said, get informed, sit with your advisors. If you don't have financial advisors, if you don't have a makelaar, get one, sit down, get to understand what's going on with your money. Then people cannot pull a fast one on you. So I think that's absolutely right there. That I think part of why the Brexit campaign was so successful, it had this idea of take back control at the center of it. So in terms of taking back control, I think take control of your finances, take control of what's going on in your community. But I think I would be remiss if I don't ask you, I think your company Brentus Wealth, in the last few months, you got some acknowledgement for the success you've been having as an organization, and perhaps as evidence to tell people that, you know, you really know what you're talking about. Perhaps you want to tell us a bit more about, did you receive an Oscar for Best Supporting Actress or something?
Herman, you're a scholar and a gentleman. We won for the second time in 4 years the award as the top boutique wealth manager in the country. So we're very proud of it. And the important part of that award is it's mainly driven by our clients. So our clients are happy. They voted. And for the second time in 3 years, we were the top in the country against some very serious competitors out there. And I think it's a reflection of what we've been telling our clients, and they really like our message. So thank you very much for that.
No, I think it's it might be a difficult country and a difficult time to live in, but I must say, as long as we have people like you who can really say what call a spade a spade, om sê soos hy is, I think South Africans have an opportunity to empower themselves and really think, my goodness, there's something to be done here. big business, big labor, big government, the evil trifecta of crony capitalism. We are more than they are. We can give them a few clops.
We can indeed. And thank you very much for this morning. Thank you, Herman.
Magnus, thank you so much. It has been a pleasure. As always, I said to Magnus that we will be taking 40 minutes of his time, and I have taken over 50. And based on Magnus's performance, I think I have just lost someone a lot of money in the last 11 minutes. Because those 11 minutes might have been spent brilliantly, but I think it was spent very, very well getting the message out there that people need to understand. If you don't understand, you can't prepare. If you can't prepare, everything will catch you off guard. Magnus, thank you very, very much for your time. We hope to speak to you again very, very soon. And please keep doing what you're doing. It is fantastic to have the bouldering voice of Magnus Haystack out there making the arguments that need to be made.
Thank you. Thank you, Herman. Cheerio. Goodbye.